My name is Lois Helland, and I am at the Wage Center at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. It's Monday, April 27th in the afternoon, 2009, and I'm interviewing Amanda Mondlock for the Women's Studies Oral History Project. So, Amanda, let's get some background information. What is the date and place of your birth?
June 30th, 1981, in Hayward, Wisconsin.
And your race?
Caucasian.
Your ancestry or ethnicity?
Norwegian, German, and a small amount of Native American and Irish.
Okay. How many male or female siblings do you have?
None. I'm an only child.
What is your birth order? Oh, you won't have a birth order.
No.
Sorry.
First and last.
Where did you attend school, and what degrees have you earned?
I graduated high school from Hayward, Wisconsin, and then I came to the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and have my bachelor's degree in psychology.
Is there anything else about your background that you think is important for me to know?
Perhaps that my parents were divorced when I was a child, so I grew up in a single-parent household with my mother in Hayward.
Okay. Tell me about the community and neighborhood where you grew up.
Hayward, Wisconsin is a small town. It's bigger than when I was in school. It's a tourist town, so in the winter time and on off season, it's kind of sleepy. It's very beautiful. When I was in school there and I lived there, it seemed to be pretty conservative, and it was very, dichotomized on how much money you made. It seemed to be like there were people that made a lot of money, and then there were people that didn't, and those were kind of, I think, the cliques. But it's just an average, I think, small-town conservative community.
Describe how your family was or was not connected to the community and neighborhood.
We, being in a single-parent household, my mother put my father through school, so she had no degree, and we didn't have much money. And so I think we didn't have time because she was always working, but also didn't have much family there and didn't have a lot of money to have strong social ties. So I think that it was sometimes just kind of her and I a little bit far removed. So,
okay. Who had power and privilege in your community, and how did that affect you and your family?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've already answered it. I really do think that the majority of people that were, and of course I'm, you know, it's Northern Wisconsin, I'm talking about white males and white people specifically, very white town. But there are people that made a lot of money up there, and so I definitely think that those are the people that had the power and the privilege.
Looking back at your childhood, would you have anticipated that you would become a feminist later in life?
I think I always knew as a child that I would be. I don't think I would have been surprised by that. I don't know if I would have... I would have been surprised by what prompted me to be in the feminist community, but I think I always was pretty aware as a child of the differences, especially growing up with just my mother and myself, the differences in what either of my parents had and the differences around us. So,
what else would you like to share about your childhood experience?
Boy, I think I had a pretty average childhood, yeah. There's not much to it.
Describe your educational path after high school.
Right away, I came to UW-Eau Claire. I first majored in vocal music education, so I was very involved in the music community, and I had a break in between college for several years, and then I came back and decided I was doing mostly women's studies courses and psychology, so.
Describe your occupational path after college.
Well, when I was 16, so up in Hayward, I was raped by two men, strangers, and I didn't talk about it at all. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't report it. I didn't even tell my parents. I came to school here, and I attended a Take Back the Night rally, and I heard students speaking out about their experiences with sexual violence and abuse. So in a new community, I started to become an old person and talk about what happened to me and tell people. And then it led me into kind of a bit of trouble. I was self-medicating. And so it was a tough time, but also a good time. And I ended up switching my majors when I decided that I wanted to give back after I had healed, which was a very long process. But after I had healed, I wanted to give back. So I went back for psychology, and I got that degree, and I did quite well in that field. And I started doing motivational speaking about my journey of healing. And then I started to volunteer and do more work. And here now I'm running the Rape Crisis Center. So
when and how were you awakened to social inequalities based on gender, race, social class, sexual orientation, and other layers of identity?
Oh. Well, for starters, I think I almost always was, because my mother was at a great disadvantage. My father had a great degree. He had a new wife. He had he was a teacher, a music teacher, and he had a great house. And here my mother and I were stuck in this tiny two-bedroom apartment, and she had to work 9-to-5 jobs in retail because there was nothing else for her, because she didn't get her degree and she couldn't. So I think I was always aware of the gender inequality, especially fiscally, and how back then, in the early 80s, we weren't getting very much money for child support. It wasn't being regulated as well as it is now. So we were really struggling, and I think I always noticed that. After I was sexually assaulted, that obviously awakened me to the violent nature of gender inequality. I think that was a big part of it. And then I'm part of the LGBT community. I'm bisexual, and there was a lot of hateful experiences towards LGBT people in the Hayward community, and so I felt that very loudly.
Describe the process you went through as you decided to identify as a feminist.
Well, when I actually decided to really start self-identifying as a feminist and really being loud and proud about it, I decided I wanted to make changes that I could in any way in my life. And I remember one of the first decisions I decided to make is that I was really disgusted with the state of pop music and the misogyny in hip-hop and R&B and all these things that I had been listening to for so long. And I decided, well, I was going to, do as I say. And I stopped listening to radio, and I haven't listened to pop radio or anything besides, NPR since then. And I remember people would get really upset if I would go out and people were dancing to a song, at a bar or something. I would say, I don't want to dance to this, and people get really upset about it, and I really think I alienated a lot of people, but I got also a very close set of people in my life that share my same values, so it really changed my life quite a bit, I think.
Can you remember a time when you discovered you were a feminist?
Okay. I don't know if I would have self-identified, but I definitely think in high school I was, because I was always really aware. I remember being the only one of my friends that was aware and constantly talking about inequalities. And I would talk to my mom and about how, I was an angsty little teenager and say, well, that's not fair, and that's really stupid, and why would they say this, and why would they do that? And, I certainly didn't get it from my mom, because she would just be like, well, why are you getting so upset? I was always really upset about inequalities and things that were happening. And so I think I always knew that's what I was, but I didn't know until I came to school, like, oh, okay, I'm a feminist. It's not just, I started learning about it, and I think growing up you think all you hear in small communities is it's anti-male, or it's just about feminism, but it was about all sorts of inequalities and social justice as a movement, and that's when I really started self-identifying that's what I was.
What resistance, if any, did you face from people you care about when you became a feminist?
so much. It's so tough even to talk to people about, in my line of work, obviously, I talk a lot about victim blaming, like blaming rape victims and rape myths. And I talk to so many people, and I always tell new volunteers when they come to work at CASA with me, you start talking to your friends and your loved ones about this, and you wouldn't believe how many of them have these beliefs that you just never would think that they have. And I think I've met a lot of resistance in being resistant to the backlash right now that's going on, that, you know, talking about women a certain way or making certain jokes, or I'm always the first person to speak up in a room, and I think we make a joke in my line of work that, you know, I'm not the popular person at parties, because people go around and say, well, what do you do? And I say, I run a rape crisis center, and immediately no one wants to say a joke, no one wants to talk to me, you know, people get really scared, and I think that's the resistance. Certainly, I think on campus I've been labeled. I think last year a student wrote an article in a newspaper calling me and CASA, I was called a feminazi, and just this huge backlash towards being anti-violence, which makes little to no sense to me, but I've gotten a lot of backlash here on the university level, and it's always been just for speaking my mind, for doing what everyone else might do and saying, I don't agree with that. I don't think that's a healthy thing to put out there, you know, in the media or whatever, and there's a huge backlash.
Well, you already answered this next question, but maybe you'll have something else to add. What have been the greatest challenges you've faced as a feminist?
I think that since I've been doing actual work and trying to educate people, I think the hardest part is media literacy and critical thinking. I've talked to people like Tracy Thomas Card, who used to run Wage, one of my very good friends. We talk a lot about how I'll go into her freshman classes and I say, I'm just alarmed at the lack of critical thinking. It's like students aren't taught anymore as they grow up to critically think. They have so much just input everywhere, media, advertising, music, and they don't think about any of it. And so I'll often say things like, now, why would you think that about that person? Or why would you say that? And what do you mean when you're saying that? And they just have no idea, and they're very upset that someone's getting them to critically think about their surroundings and the things that they're doing. So that's a big part.
Thank you. Which of your contributions have made the greatest difference in shaping feminist theories and practices and your own understanding of yourself as a feminist?
Boy, that's a big one.
It is.
I feel like the biggest contributions, perhaps, that I've made are finding ways to talk to students about sexual violence and feminism in a way that meets them at the level that they're at, because it's very difficult. And it took several years for me to kind of get a hang of it, but to really get people to break down the defenses and get them involved in the movement and to see that that's, you know, and I think that there has been a lot of stereotypes. I mean, there obviously has about feminists in the past, and I don't know. I tend to not meet many of them, and even in the, you know, gay community or anything like that, I tend to not meet any sort of stereotypes. And I think that helps to just see people as they are and see women more for their, you know, minds and than their just appearance and their bodies. I think that my contributions have been mostly in the anti-violence movement, really just trying to talk about it and getting new ways to discuss it, new ways to approach issues.
Has getting involved in that movement changed your understanding of yourself as a feminist?
Completely, completely. I think before I was educated, before I had taken my women's studies classes, before I was really, really involved heavily in this movement and in this work, I was completely part of that movement. I call them the Girls Gone Wild feminists that think that, I don't know, I hate to use the term, but sexual promiscuity is power, like the Sex and the City style of feminist. And I completely used to be that. And then a lot of people that knew me from that part of my life well, we certainly don't talk anymore, and we certainly have nothing in common. And when I lost a lot of friends when I started to really identify and really find out where my heart was, because my attitudes and beliefs and everything really changed. I'm very vocal and opinionated about my opinions, and that really set a lot of people back. And I think I've learned so much about myself where my heart really does lie with issues, and how to be more confident, and how to be the person that I want to be, you know, and to really critically think and evaluate society and where it's going, and to try and make a change and make it better. Yeah.
A more general question here. What do you consider the greatest achievement of feminism over the past 25 years?
Wow. Well, obviously, I think that I'm pretty biased, but I really do feel like the anti-violence movement has come so far. It's nothing like it was when I was sexually assaulted, and I feel like that's such a gift that I can give back to people. I think the awareness of things has come so far, and I love how feminists took the social justice movement and gave it a platform. So now it's just everywhere. You know, there's a human trafficking group on campus. There's all sorts of different things that you see. And I just feel like without feminism, I don't know where that would be, you know, and to see all the communication about, you know, people of color and women of color and social injustices and gender inequity and pay and even things about the earth, you know, I just think that's the greatest contribution is, I think, thinking more about all of these inequalities, and I think that makes us as society better people. I mean, I really do think we're just better people than we have been in the past, or at least there are still people struggling for that.
What do you think are the most important challenges feminism must overcome in this century?
I think right now there's a huge backlash going on, I think because we've had less to struggle for in my generation growing up, I think we got really comfortable with our spot, and then we started listening again to people in power that aren't, you know, aren't feminists, aren't on our side. And I think I think the young generation of women is really incredibly confused, and men as well. And I think that it almost feels like we have to do it all over again, but in a different way. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge, because I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. Just like the, I feel like right now the LGBT equality movement is our biggest challenge, is one of our biggest challenges. And so I think we're going to keep fighting for that. I know we're going to keep fighting for that, but I just see young women having no idea of how much they're being hurt, and it's so hard to reach them. We don't even speak anymore. It's all technology. We Twitter and we text and we have our online communities, and I don't know how people are going to learn, because we just don't even talk anymore. And so I just hope that we can get through this kind of uber-conservative, right-wing Christian backlash against, you know, everything that we are. Like, the modesty movement scares me so much. And so I think that's it. That's going to be our struggle. It's just going to be another struggle.
So let's focus a bit on UWC's Women's Studies program. How long and in what ways have you been engaged with UWC's Women's program?
Well, the second time I came back to the university, I took a ton of women's studies courses and sociology courses, like sociology of women and sociology of gender, which also kind of counted as women's studies as well. And so I really got into it, obviously. And working with CASA, the CASA office used to be in the women's studies office. And so I really was close in contact with all of the faculty and staff, and I got to really see everything that was going on. And I worked closely with the Women's and Gender Equity here, and that's been a lot of Women's Studies students. And I think it's a good thing, but at the same time, it's kind of sad that CASA and anti-sexual violence really gets lumped with women's studies. It gets automatically, it's a feminist thing, which it is a feminist thing, and it's wonderful, but I think that lets some people just kind of shove it aside. But so that's, it makes an obvious connection. And so any sort of the things like that in connection, I was part of the college feminist group when I was in school and took part in a lot of those activities and things. So when I was here as a student, I felt like I was pretty connected for a good couple of years.
Have you seen the program change during the time that you've been involved with it?
Well, they actually have a women's studies degree now. I mean, that's been a big change. Yeah. I haven't seen, I mean, I think they're just doing wonderful. I've seen, there was a transition when Susan, that was head of the women's studies department, left, and we have Justin Rhodes now. I don't think I've seen too much. I think they're doing just as wonderful as they have been. I think I see it more from a removed standpoint, where I see, just like I've mentioned before, the backlash is really strong here in our community, because I think we have a liberal college, and we talk about how liberal it makes the Chippewa Valley, and I just... I just don't see it. I mean, I think we are pretty conservative, and I like to say that we're not, but it's a pretty conservative town, and I think we're getting a huge amount of conservative students coming forward, and there's been, boy, there's been quite a few things said about women's studies and about, you know, Wade and Acosta and all that stuff, so.
What do you see are the major contributions of the UW-Eau Claire Women's Studies to the campus, the community, and beyond?
I think it's so much. I really do. Because just like I said, it's a conservative community, and I just think the Women's Studies program gives a voice to the underprivileged and the subdominant groups that I don't think would be there. I really don't. I mean, we're incredibly white. We have so many women, but they're also confused. They have no idea. They don't teach women's studies in high school. They don't talk about equality. They talk about George Washington and Columbus and how Columbus was such a great guy. And, you know, you just don't find these things out. And so I think I've seen a lot of students take women's studies courses that hated it going into it and end up coming out with such a different idea of how things are really working and things that they've never thought about. And also, I think it gets students motivated to make a change. I think it really does. And I've seen protests. I've seen, you know, wonderful forums. I think we're really lucky. I think it's hard work to have it and maintain it here because it's difficult, but I think it's doing wonders.
Share any stories of people and or events that you think are significant in shaping the 25-year history of women's studies at UW-Eau Claire.
Wow. So significant things that the women's studies program here has done.
People or events that are significant in shaping this women's studies.
I think Susan Terrell has done a really wonderful job. I really do. I mean, I think she's just great. I mean, I think she's just great. I think she brought so much to our program, and I think she really built it up. I think Laurel Kiefer gives wonderful contributions in the work that she's done for so long and in the anti-violence movement, and it's a really good perspective. And so I think that all of the women have contributed wonderfully in bringing feminism here and bring women's studies.
What do you consider your major contribution to the success of the program?
Oh. Boy, I don't know. Maybe I'm too modest for that question. I think I'm just a bat of an eyelash in all of the things that they've done. And I'm happy to kind of sit by their side and be in the anti-violence movement and really talk about feminism in a way that's relative to students. And I try incredibly hard to bring awareness to these things and to show people that it's not what they think it is. You know, that it can be incredibly relative. And I try and fight alongside of them, and I think, hopefully, I hope that I'm making a difference.
So that leads right into the next question, which is, what would you like your legacy in the Women's Studies program to be?
Oh, I just hope that, I hope that CASA stays around. I hope that we get the university motivated and thinking about the inequalities that we do have here and what is going on and how to truly, truly affect and help these young women. And so I just hope to leave a legacy that, you know, I don't know, we can keep the program going and we can keep it strong and we can keep our voices being heard.
And if you think about the future, what role do you think women's studies will play on the UW Eau Claire campus, community, and beyond?
I am afraid that I almost feel like there's going to be a hostile takeover at some point. I know that the Wage Center is not appreciated. I've heard that people want to make it go away. They say, why do we even need a Women's and Gender Equity Center? And I've heard they wanted to shut down, the nameless people, wanted to shut down our diversity center because there were people that were offended by gay people holding hands and kissing. And I constantly hear all these things, and I'm just really scared that one day we're going to wake up and people are going to say, well, why do we even need that? Why don't we have a men's studies department? Why don't we this? And I think that the women's studies department is going to hold steady onto that and really take that as an opportunity to educate people. And I just think that's what's going to happen in the future. And I'm so afraid of that. And I'm thankful that the women's studies department is so strong right now and doing such a wonderful job and making such valuable contributions, that it won't all disappear. I mean, I feel okay. I'm going to leave, you know, soon, eventually, and I feel okay leaving it now that I know that we have such a strong foundation.
What story is most important for you to tell as part of this oral history project? Okay. I'm culminating chance.
I think the most important thing I'd like to talk about, I think, is how our community is really friendly and wonderful. As feminists here, I think we kind of bond together, and I do think that there are some really scary things going on, and I think we really have our hands on it, and I think that we're all doing our part, and I think we're all bringing our personal experiences into this, which I think is so important. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not anything too huge that I want to talk about. I just think we're doing a really good job, and I think it's really difficult, and I think we're all really talking about our personal experiences like we never have been before, and I think that's what everybody needs to hear. So, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Of course.